Welcome back to Aperture. The money lobby has so far showed us why they say US democracy is the best money can buy. A democracy of the 1%, by the 1%, and for the 1%. From the Koch brothers to George Soros, from K Street to Wall Street, and special interest groups from the financial sector to big oil to the so-called defense industry. A democracy sold to the highest bidder. Politicians ranting against their paymasters to get elected. After all, you don't have to fool all the people all the time. You just need to fool enough people to get elected.
Are federally registered political committees, so they do have to disclose their donors above a certain relatively low threshold, I think $200, and they've got to report their expenditures. And then in order for them to engage in the unlimited spending, that spending has to be independent. It cannot be coordinated with the candidate. So in the most general way is they've got to keep their distance. That doesn't mean they can't copy each other.
What you see is money being given from an original source, but their identity is shielded because they can give to an organization that is a tax-exempt nonprofit corporation. They are referred to by their title in the IRS code as either 501c4s, which are ostensibly social welfare groups, or 501c6s, which are trade association groups like the Chamber of Commerce. Anyone can give any amount of money to those organizations and know that their identity will not be disclosed to the American people. Then those groups can spend that money themselves, or they can give it to a super PAC.
In order to sway the general public, super PACs use most of their money to buy expensive airtime on national and local television for attack ads. They highlight the other candidate's flaws and are sometimes hard-hitting and very direct. The characters in these ads are usually someone that the average American can relate to.
2008, I voted for President Obama with no reluctance.
He presented himself as something different.
I had hoped that the new president would bring new jobs, not major layoffs, not people going through major foreclosures on their homes.
Rhino Romney is the least electable, with a long history of rejecting conservatism. In 1994, he refused to sign the contract with America. And as governor of Massachusetts, he passed Romneycare, the model for Obamacare.
This was household income when President Obama took office. This was the national debt. Under Obama, families have lost over $4,000 a year in income, and the national debt is now $16 trillion and growing.
Governor Romney's plan for America right now is the same plan that he sold to the people of Massachusetts in 2002. Less government, less debt, better business, and less taxes. The result was the opposite. More fees, less business, more debt, bigger government here in Boston.
Winning our future is responsible for the content of this.
Americans for Prosperity is responsible for the content.
Susan B. Anthony List is responsible for the content of this advertising.
A few big dogs are the main super PACs out there. In 2010, an organization called American Crossroads was the biggest super PAC in terms of fundraising. That was a group that was started by GOP strategists Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie. Those are very powerful, influential Republican strategists. Karl Rove used to work for President George W. Bush, and Gillespie used to work as the chairman of the Republican National Commission. So these are professional political operatives who set up a group. And unlike previous political action committees, super PACs had the advantage of being able to take unlimited amounts of money, and they couldn't donate that money to other candidates, but what they could do was run ads that said pretty much whatever they wanted, attacking a candidate, supporting a candidate.
I'm Craig Holman. I'm the government affairs lobbyist for Public Citizen. As the government affairs lobbyist, I focus on issues that deal with money and politics. So that could be campaign finance reform, governmental ethics, lobby reform, those types of issues. That money goes totally undisclosed. What we have seen, by the way, just in 2010, we don't have final figures for 2012 yet, but in 2010 we do have final figures. Right after the Citizens United decision happened, 2010 was the first election that we saw its impact, and there was a 427% increase in outside spending in the 2010 elections. 427%. And we don't know where that money came from, because most of it went into the 501c4s. And so, totally undisclosed, all we know is there's a whole lot more money coming into the elections, and we don't know where it's coming from.
According to OpenSecrets.org, super PACs received over $838 million and spent just about $622 million in the 2012 election cycle. And the super PAC that raised the most money, Restore Our Future, raised over $153 million in support for Romney. Priorities USA Action, which was the largest super PAC supporting Obama, raised over $79 million. Overall, $1.2 billion was spent in the 2012 election, which was a significant increase compared to the past 22 years.
Restore Our Future. That is the main pro-Mitt Romney super PAC. It was started by several former Romney advisors. Again, a very elite set of political operatives worked on Restore Our Future's behalf, trying to elect Mitt Romney. And the main Democratic super PAC was a group called Priorities USA Action. And that group's mission was to help re-elect President Barack Obama. Priorities USA Action produced a lot of attack ads going after Mitt Romney for his time at Bain Capital.
Mitt Romney, he made millions off companies that went bankrupt while workers lost promised health and retirement benefits. His own tax return from last year reveals he made $21 million, yet paid a lower tax rate than many middle-class families. Now Romney's proposing a huge new $150,000 tax cut for the wealthiest 1%, while cutting Medicare and education for us. Mitt Romney, if he wins, we lose. Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this act.
These outside spending groups serve as megaphones for millionaires and really allow those with the largest financial resources to drown out the voices of the average American citizens who, you know, have just as much right to be represented by their elected officials.
The number one super donor was a billionaire casino owner named Sheldon Adelson. The number one super donor among Democratic circles was a man by the name of Fred Eichner from Chicago. He is involved in several media companies and was active on a lot of fronts supporting various Democratic super PACs, and the amount of money that he gave doesn't quite stack up to what Sheldon Adelson gave. Sheldon Adelson and his wife accounted for about $1 of every $9 that super PACs raised.
It is uncommon for average Americans to make large campaign contributions. Less than 1% donated more than $200 to any candidate or PAC or political committee. But you can see the voice of big money in political ads that bombard voters leading up to elections.
Another month, even more Americans jobless.
He's the $200 million man. And Big Oil's fingerprints are all over him.
Right now, he's not going to be able to win re-election.
He's got real problems.
You're right.
GOP frontrunner Mitt Romney
has the best chance if the election were held right now.
You know, it's funny because whenever you ask a voter in a poll how they feel about elections, the first thing that they will say is that the negative ads turn them off. But they are the most effective way to turn the tide for a candidate to make their campaign better. So you can say 100 good things about somebody, but as soon as you say one bad thing about somebody, that's what the electorate remembers. But it all really, with a negative ad to be successful, right, it all really boils down to how it's crafted. The it's really propaganda. There's a certain kinds of messaging that are involved to influence a person's frame on a candidate, their emotional feel, their personal feel, and so forth. So if you could, what these advertisers do is they test these ads with a focus group, and they determine what the best one is. And then that is what becomes the big ad on the airwaves. And negative ads are helpful also to the candidate because they generate free press.
What people dislike about the so-called negative ads is not that they're critical. I mean, you can't run a campaign without being critical of your opponent. It's not that they're critical. What people mean by negative ads that they don't like are irresponsible ads, or scurrilous ads, are things that people say that you can never catch up to, that aren't true. Though that is much more likely to happen in a situation where the candidate is not accountable for the speech because it's the independent person who's saying it. If David Koch goes out and runs an ad that's outrageous, you can't hold Romney responsible for it because by law they were supposed to be separated. But if Koch gives Romney the money and he takes out an ad, and something in that ad is irresponsible, then he can be held accountable for it. So to a large extent, the growth of the super PACs severed accountability by the candidate for what was said in his behalf. And that is not a good thing. So it's true that in order to speak, I mean, I can go out in a corner and just start talking, and maybe a dozen people who walk by me will hear me. But if you want to reach a significant number of people, especially in an election, you have to spend money. So money and speech are not the same, but one depends on the other. And that's the fear. And it's a real fear. If only one side gets to reach people with their message, it is going to distort democracy. The question is, what do you do about that?
What was really, really striking about the 2012 electoral cycle, particularly in the primary period, was how many committees that were organized to specifically advance specific candidates, that they were set up by former aides to these candidates. And that, I don't think we had seen that before, which were committees which really can't be described as anything other than alter egos. There were restrictions on their ability to contact the candidate. They have to operate independently, but these are people who were former campaign treasurers, former chiefs of staff, former aides. One politician at some point early in this process said, pretty soon every motorcycle will have its own sidecar. And, you know, in some ways it's hard to tell which is the motorcycle and which is the sidecar, given the amounts of money involved.
I want to make clear, it's not, in my view, the number, the actual amount of money that's the problem. The problem here is where it's coming from, what are the expectations in return. What happened in the election and who won and who lost obviously is important, but what's going to be even more critical is what goes on now up on Capitol Hill when all of these donors come in to cash in on their money. I think the thing is Americans fully understand this. They just feel helpless to do anything about it. They know the money buys access. They know the big money buys influence. What they don't know is what to do about it.
Super PACs are here to stay, so the question then becomes is if you can't get rid of or mitigate this flow of money from these few wealthy individuals, what problem can you then solve?
First step, disclosure. There's no reason that this 113th Congress shouldn't pass a disclosure bill that makes sure that the money spent to influence the outcome of our elections is disclosed, regardless of the source. Second, the IRS. We have a president who says he supports campaign finance reform. He has an IRS that has allowed the current rules to be so ridiculously interpreted in kind of an Alice in Wonderland interpretation. There's something the IRS could do right away to change the rules about how you count political money. And so far, they've taken no action. The Federal Election Commission. If you simply had commissioners who actually did enforce the law and interpret it in the spirit of the law, you could get rid of these candidate-centered super PACs like, you know, Restore Our Future, the Romney super PAC, or, you know, Priorities USA that are run by the cronies of the politicians. That's a fixable thing to do. Fourth, There's legislation pending in Congress, and I think you're going to see it introduced again, to try and change the incentives in the system. There's a system right now in campaigns in which the candidates really have no reason to do anything other than pursue the large money. And there's very few incentives for an average American to give. That needs to change.
So the Empowering Citizens Act, first of all, would enact new curbs on super PACs. More importantly, it will empower tens of millions of citizens to make small contributions and counter the role of super PACs. If you have large sums of money coming from many citizens, then you dilute the power of super PACs. You reduce the potential for corruption, and you give candidates an alternative way to raise money to finance their elections, where they don't have to sell their souls to big money givers.
And now that this election is over, hopefully we're going to see a lot of public pressure on the new Congress, a lot of public pressure demanding that they pass legislation to open up the books on money and politics, get some real transparency going on there, and perhaps even approving a constitutional amendment resolution. The American public understands that democracy is under danger, and they really want something done about this.
The major thrust of campaign finance reform laws in the last 40 years has been to restrict spending on speech. There's an alternative that has never been used, and the alternative is, if the problem is that you have 80% of the money, and I only have 2% of the money, so that you get to speak and be heard, and I don't, so it's not fair for us to run against each other, because your message gets out and mine doesn't. The remedy to that is to increase the floor, not to lower the ceiling.
Well, we can't put spending limits on candidates anymore, because there are outside groups that can come into their campaigns and spend unlimited amounts of money. What we need to do is make sure that candidates can get access to large amounts of clean campaign finance resources. So the key here, in my view, is we need to drown the big money system with lots of small contributions.
So one of the things that we need to focus on when looking at super PACs is not necessarily how much money they're spending, but rather how they're influencing and shaping the political discussions during the elections to get citizens and the American public in general to focus not necessarily on the root cause of the problem, but on issues such as good versus bad, Republican versus Democrats.
The United States Supreme Court has just acquired a powerful new corporate sponsor, Koch Industries.
If there was corruption before the Citizens United decision, if our political process, not just our elections, but the laws that come from that building, if those laws were corrupt before Citizens United, I think we can say that they're more corrupt after Citizens United. And best of all, I think that there's now a flag that we can raise called Citizens United to call attention to the American people that we have a problem. Congress, Supreme Court, we have a problem.
Well, the Federal Election Commission does exactly what it was designed to do, which is nothing. It is designed for gridlock. It's an agency that has done very little to change any of the rules about how super PACs actually run in the real world.
We've heard a lot of concern, of course, from elected officials who are now existing in a new realm of kind of a Wild West money in politics, where it's just about who has the biggest gun, and there really isn't a sheriff anymore since the FEC has really stepped back from taking a strong enforcement role in making sense of our current system.
It was never created, it was never designed to be a really forceful or aggressive kind of organization, and there were good reasons for that. You don't want some bureaucrats in Washington imposing themselves in specific elections around the country where they're effectively going to be able to decide who wins or who loses, who gets to run for office in the first place. That feels bad to us as Americans. We don't really like that.
What's missing is, what's the public interest here? The whole purpose in the money in politics is to have a discussion so that the public interest is part of that. When you get here in Washington and you get the Republicans versus the Democrats, average American obviously can be left out of that very, very easily. The money in politics issue in Washington really is the umbrella issue. If you care about the environment, or you care about student costs, you care about your parents or your grandparents, the decisions that get made here in Washington on all of these important issues in large part are determined by the money that comes into this town washing around in many different ways, and really has a huge influence on how decisions get made and what decisions get made.
The interesting thing is the citizens of the country totally object to this new system that the Supreme Court has created. They know that corporate expenditures can buy influence over government decisions. They believe that those expenditures are closer to bribery than they are to free speech. They overwhelmingly think that super PACs should be made illegal. They overwhelmingly believe that the secret money that is being laundered into the elections should be required to be disclosed.
And we're talking about almost $600 million raised from 210 donors. And the people who would fit on a single airplane, that number of people was able to put more than $500 million into the process this year.
I have some faith that members of Congress want to change it, because many of them looked at this last election and both were horrified, and now I will tell you they're scared to death that they're going to be the next victim. My fear is that in this world of super PACs and the dark money groups, this anonymous money, is that most Americans will say, my money doesn't matter, my voice doesn't matter, and they turn off. And they not only become cynical, they become apathetic. And in a democracy, there's probably nothing more dangerous.
You and I, as citizens, have the power to set this country's course. You and I, as citizens, have the obligation to shape the debates of our time, not only with the votes we cast, but with the voices we lift in defense of our most ancient values and enduring ideals. Let us, each of us, now embrace with solemn duty and awesome joy what is our lasting birthright. With common effort and common purpose, with passion and dedication, let us answer the call of history and carry into an uncertain future that precious light of freedom. Thank you. God bless you. And may he forever bless these United States of America.
You know, the great American poet Walt Whitman noted that history of democracy could not be written because democracy, as he and others knew it, had not yet been built. So let's not fool ourselves that we live in a perfect democracy. So the point isn't that money is pouring into politics. I mean, this we all know. What's happening is that money is monopolizing the political discourse and also stifling the voices of average citizens. That said, let's not forget that historically, democracy or not, people will rise to the occasion if governments no longer serve the interests of citizens. So if the government wants to preserve its own legitimacy, it must acknowledge that there are limits to what the citizens will take.
Money Lobby was a sad but true story of the pay-to-play politics in Washington and the realpolitik underworld of money and power. The story of the top 1% outvoting the bottom 99%. Yet Lincoln was right. You may fool some of the people all of the time. You may also fool all of the people some of the time. But you can never, never fool all of the people all of the time. Well, that's it for this edition of Aperture, but before we say goodbye, a reminder to check our website at www.presstv.ir/doc. Please email us your questions and comments, and here is our email address, documentary@presstv.ir. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Once again, thank you for watching, and join us next week on another Aperture.